Welcome to another episode of the Wednesday Conversation. I'm Mike Kresnick, and I'm here with Pastor Bob Thune and Pastor Dusty White of Corumdale Church. And Pastor Chris Hemelman is back with us from First City Church.
It's been a while.
Every Wednesday, we sit down to talk about how the gospel of Jesus Christ connects to the questions and issues of everyday life. And today, we're remembering Harold Thune.
Guys, thanks for letting me take an episode just to talk about my grandfather.
Yeah.
I guess we're doing like a eulogy episode every once in a while now. It's sort of like this is a new feature on the podcast. But my grandfather recently passed away at the age of 100. Mm. The folks of Corumdale know that because I talked about that in a sermon a few weeks ago. But I wanted to just reflect on his legacy. Number one, it's not often that people live to be 100. I think that's kind of cool. Number two, he was a very influential man in my life and in a lot of people's lives. So I just wanted a chance to sort of reflect on some of the things I learned from him and sort of talk about his life and legacy a little bit. It's interesting to me that we're going to talk in some future episodes about the book of Ecclesiastes, which is a book that I'm preaching through right now. And that book just focuses a lot on thinking about death and sort of thinking about what's going to, you know, what's coming, the fact that life is short. And so it seems fitting that we could reflect on my grandfather's life, because I think he was a man who lived with the end in mind, who had a sense of, hey, one day I'm going to stand before God and I'm going to have to give account for my life. And so I want to sort of take a moment to honor him and think about him. I was thinking about how do I summarize my grandfather's 100 years of life in 30 minutes or so?
It's a long time.
And I thought, I think I want to talk about him in three categories, as a patriot, as a patriarch, and as a man of principle, because that sort of was the flow of his life. Patriot, meaning he was a World War II veteran, and I feel like he was a patriot in the noblest and best sense of the word, not in a partisan way, not in an America first kind of a way, but just in a way that had a really deep appreciation of freedom, sacrifice, all the things that sort of the greatest generation did well. So I wanted to talk about sort of him being a patriot, him being a patriarch in our family, and then a man of principle, which I think will connect most to those last two probably are connected for all of us, the lives we're trying to live, and I think gives listeners a chance to think about what does it mean for me to live that way. All right, so first things first, my grandfather in college enlisted in the U.S. Navy. Obviously, there was a draft going on. It was World War II. And so I think he figured out that if he enlisted, they would defer him. They would let him graduate before he went to the Navy. So he enlisted. And then as soon as he was done with school, went to join the Navy. What was significant about that in his life was he was also a Division I basketball player. MVP his junior year for the University of Minnesota, Golden Gophers. So he was a significant presence on campus and had, you know, a significant athletic career. And it's just interesting to me that probably in our day, people who have that kind of life would sort of try to leverage that for something. And he was sort of like, all right, well, it's time for me to go to war. So I'm going to go enlist in the Navy and go learn to fly. And so he went to flight school, became a fighter pilot, working on an aircraft carrier in the South Pacific, ended up having a pretty good fighter pilot career. Number one, came back alive. And number two, received the Distinguished Flying Cross, which is an aviation medal for heroic efforts in war. Guys, here's the funniest thing about my grandfather, the stories he would tell. And I read a newspaper article recently where he had told this story to a journalist as well. So you can find it online. But I think if I remember right, it's been a long time since I've seen this movie, but I think there's a scene in Top Gun that's based on a maneuver that my grandfather actually did in war.
No way.
The one where he flew upside down and...
No, not that, the Russians? Not that one.
Was it the volleyball spike on the beach? Was it that one?
Negative, Ghost Rider. Okay. The pattern is full. Wasn't that part either.
It wasn't that part either, no. But there's a scene where he pulls up and hits the brakes, and basically the plane that's behind him flies underneath him, and then he drops back in behind it.
Yeah.
My grandfather actually did that in an aerial dogfight over the island of Formosa.
Your grandfather is amazing.
And he talks about, it's really fascinating because he talks about basically like being a fighter pilot, there's like a body of knowledge. There's like a tradition there. And so he talked about before we went out on this mission, we were sitting around as pilots talking about it. One of his friends, Cecil Harris, had described this maneuver and said, I did this in training one time. I think it'll work in real life. If anyone gets on your tail and you're having a hard time shaking them, try this. And so my grandfather had that conversation a few hours before. He's in this aerial dogfight. That was what happened. And so he just pulls up on the stick, hits the, gets off the throttle and does that whole maneuver. And it was like,
wow.
One of those like, oh, that's crazy. Like,
dude.
Wow. So he was full of stories like that. And, you know, he told them in very humble ways. It wasn't like, bragging or, you know, braggadocious in any way, sort of like, yeah, well, there was this one time when this happened, you know, he's very matter of fact about it. And so I think for him, that's that whole experience of being in the war, having to be under orders, having to follow commands and do what people told him to do. And also having the opportunity to fly a fighter and sort of learn all the skills and stuff of that. That was obviously a very sort of shaping experience for him as a young man. I want to say he was, you know, 20 or 21 when he went to war, would have been, you know, 24 when he came home. So that experience was defining in the way that it was for all the World War II generation. But I just remember growing up as a kid, that was just the world of my grandfather's existence, you know? Yeah. And so I was fascinated with fighter planes and fighter jets, and I would build like scale models of all these old planes and hang them from my ceiling when I was a kid, you know? And so to me, it was almost like this like imaginary world. And I was just, he would, you know, hey, tell me stories about what it was, you know, tell me that story again about what it was like when your carrier got hit by kamikazes and you couldn't land. You know, he just had all these stories that he would just like narrate very matter of factly. As though, you know, yeah, this happened. And so for me, it was that interesting combination of two worlds where I was just really interested in that stuff. But here was my grandfather who actually lived that and did that and could tell you stories about it. And one of the most significant things for me, I have not been there yet. The aircraft carrier that he was on, the USS Intrepid, was decommissioned by the Navy and was scheduled to get scrapped. Instead, they made it into a museum and it's parked in New York Harbor. And so to this day, you can go there and it's sort of like a World War II, you know, living museum almost. And so one of my bucket list things is to go to New York and to go to the Intrepid and just see like, oh, this is the ship that my grandfather actually lived on.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. This is like his world. So he was a patriot in the best sense of the word. And I think lived the rest of his life with a great sense of the sacrifice that his fellow aviators had to make. And just with a sense of like the nobility of giving your life and skill for the sake of others, that shaped him significantly in his early life. The second category, and maybe the more significant one for our family, is, you know, he was the patriarch in the best way, in the sense that he was the spiritual, he was the beginning of a spiritual heritage. He was the sort of genesis of God's work in our family. He has five kids and a bunch of grandkids and a bunch of great grandkids. And most of them are walking with the Lord. And that's pretty much as a result of just his love for Christ and his spiritual influence on the family. He was 31 or 32 years old when he came to faith. It was after he had come back from the war. And in fact, we're going to play a clip here. I have this recording on my computer. I remember when I was 12 years old, 10 years old, 1984, a family Christmas, sitting around my grandparents' table. I was the oldest grandchild. And his kids had a cassette recorder, and they were just making him tell stories, and they hit record and just recorded like his life story, basically. And so I found that recording when I was cleaning out my parents' house a few years ago. They were moving and I was going through some stuff and I was like, hey, can I digitize this? So I took that cassette tape, digitized it. And so I've got this MP3 file on my computer that's just my grandfather at age, what would he have been then? In his late 50s, probably early 60s, talking about his life. And so I found the spot in that recording where he describes how he came to faith in Christ. And it was through a friend of his he'd known from high school, who came back to visit and basically invited him to a Bible study and share the gospel with him. My grandfather had grown up in a church going family. So, you know, he wasn't totally unfamiliar with the scriptures, but he describes in this clip how he came to faith. And I thought it'd be fun to listen to him tell it in his own words.
It was during this time that John and Virginia had introduced us to a Bible study. and challenged us with the gospel of Christ. And in 1951, in the fall that year, in August, both Patty and I gave our lives to Jesus Christ as our Savior and Lord.
Now let me cut in here for just a second. He invited you to a Bible study, and if I remember correctly from what you've told us before, you were a little reluctant about going, but he was an old classmate, and you kind of just felt like you ought to oblige him. And
I think so. Of course, John and Virginia didn't have any friends in Myrtle, and he and I had been in the same class in high school, and it seemed, you know, only the decent thing to do to associate with him a little bit. And it wasn't an immediate Bible study. We had ice cream together a night or two and had watermelon a couple of different times. And in the course of our conversation and so on, he started to explain to us some things that were in the Bible. And, of course, neither Patty or I were aware of this. These were dealing more with end-time things, the rapture of the church, the second coming of Christ, things like this, that although we had spent the better part of our lives in Sunday school and church, we had not heard any of this. So we were curious. Our life at that time was not the smoothest due to the world's effect upon our lives. And so this was something that we felt a real need and a real desire to find out a little bit about. Well, obviously, if you subject yourself to the Word of God and are searching, God's going to meet that need, which He did in our lives.
So that's my dad at 38 years old interviewing his father, who's 60 something at that time. Maybe not 60 yet. Maybe he's in his 50s still. And the people he's describing is John and Virginia Parker. So that's where my oldest son's name comes from. And I think it's just an interesting, like, he's just talking about missional life, right? He's saying we went and had ice cream with them, and then, you know, we thought we should hang out. We were friends from high school, and eventually they started talking about what they believed in the Bible and invited us to study it with them. He goes on in that clip to talk about, my dad asked more, like, hey, tell me what was that like? What was the Bible study like? Well, the Parkers lived 4 doors up the street from my grandfather. So it was like, you just walk down the street, you're at their house. So basically what it was grandma and grandpa had put the kids to bed. They would go up to the Parker's house at 8 o'clock p.m. And my grandfather says we would study the Bible till 1 in the morning. Mm. And my dad was like, that's a really long time. He's like, well, yeah, there was a lot to talk about. And he said he and grandma were asking a bunch of questions. And so John Parker didn't have the answers to their questions. So he would spend the whole next day while he was working, like reading his Bible and trying to figure out the answers to all the questions they had, so that the next night he could come and answer their questions. So, But you hear him there in his very sort of measured and humble way, just talking about how he came to faith, and that was 1951. And of course, that changed the course of his whole life and the course of our family's whole trajectory. You heard him say, you know, he wasn't an irreligious guy. He'd been in Sunday school and church, but he had never given his life to Christ. He was unfamiliar with the news of the gospel, and that really changed everything about his future, about our family's future. And what I appreciate about my grandfather is he was just the kind of man who, he's not going to make a decision like that lightly. That's why he wanted to have lots of conversations and ask lots of questions and really understand this thing that John and Virginia were talking about, this gospel of Jesus. And man, once he was convinced of it, he was going to give his life to Christ and go all in, and everything that required and meant for him was downstream from there.
So he's a patriarch, not in the sense of just being the oldest guy around, and so we need to honor him. But he's a patriarch in the sense that he has changed the trajectory of your family. All those kids are walking with Jesus.
Yeah.
And so he literally drove a stake in the ground and changed the course of history, really, for that family.
Yeah. And you heard him talk about that little line of our lives weren't the smoothest, you know, kind of like, I'm trying to read between the lines and go like, I don't know what that meant, but it meant like life wasn't going great. And so I imagine, and my dad narrates, you know, that, yeah, man, how he parented changed, what he did with his time changed, what he did with his money changed. Like, there was a wholesale sort of shift in, okay, what is our family going to be about? That very much shaped the future generations. Yeah.
So I experienced him as the patriarch. When I came to faith, it was underneath your dad's preaching ministry. So I had met him a couple times here in Omaha when they were visiting. This was before he got much older and couldn't travel on his own. And then I was always intrigued by that because when I became a Christian, I realized, oh, this is kind of what I'm doing. Whatever this older guy did is kind of what the Lord's inviting me into, which has always been inspiring to me. And I remember my wife is from Montana, so we would drive from Nebraska to Montana. And on one of those trips, we decided, well, we'll just go the South Dakota way. It's not any shorter. It's less miles, takes longer. But we only did it once.
You went through Murdo?
Yeah. So we went through Murdo. We needed gas. And I said, oh, Murdo. I've heard of Murdo. I know some people from Murdo. And I experienced him as the patriarch there. So what happens is we pull into this gas station to get gas. We had a couple little children at the time. And your grandpa walked out of the gas station. Now, it's not like Omaha, right?
Yeah, it's a
small town. There's a couple different gas stations, though. There's enough for two or three or something. And he walked out, and I was like, hey, I know you. And so I introduced myself to him, and I told him, you know, how I was connected. And it was just a really pleasant conversation. But he's a patriarch in the sense that even in that town, right, Bob, he has changed really a lot of things in Murdo, and his influence, his leadership, following Christ, all of his character kind of permeates through there. I remember grabbing ice cream or lunch or something at a place and then looking across the road and it being the auditorium named after him. He was a teacher in that town. And so tell a little bit about that.
Yeah.
And his influence just beyond your family.
Well, so it's interesting. I was just doing some research yesterday. So one of his good friends, one of his flying buddies, a guy named Cecil Harris, who was also from South Dakota, one of the most decorated fighter pilots in all of World War II, shot down 24 enemy planes. My grandfather shot down 4, you know, so they both went back to South Dakota after the war. I learned tragically through some research yesterday that Cecil Harris committed suicide in his 60s. He just got to a place of real despair. And I think maybe, you know, who knows what was all going on there. But, you know, it was hard for that generation, I think, coming back from sort of that kind of an experience, going back to a small place and sort of living a small life, right? I mean, it's just you're in a small town and, you know, that's great that you're a war hero, but no one's calling you up and trying to interview you and talk about the past. You know, it's kind of like you're back to life. Well, my grandfather just was a faithful, you know, he somehow made that shift and just came back and said, hey, I'm running a hardware store in this town. He ran a hardware store for a long time. When he came to Christ, this is small town stuff, right? But when he came to Christ, left the church they were in, started a church in his living room. The townspeople didn't like that. So they basically boycotted his hardware store and they would drive 20 miles down the road to the hardware store in the next town to buy hardware and drove him out of business. So he went back to school, got his teaching certificate, started teaching high school at age, whatever he was at that time, 40 something. He has that presence in the town of just like a guy who's been here so long and who's so committed to this place that like he has credibility, you know, cause it wasn't just that he was an athlete who had success and a war hero who had success, but just he taught high school. He lives up the street, started a church, you know, he's that guy who just was faithful to be from that place and happy to be from that place and wasn't seeking notoriety or fame or anything, just really grounded in that place. And it was a town he'd grown up in. He lived there. We're heading there for his funeral right after this recording. And I realized it's 2020. His parents moved to that town in 1930. So he's been in the same town for 90 years, except for going to college and going to the Navy, you know. That's a long time in one place.
Man.
So yeah, he's like the father of the city in a lot of ways. Yeah. You know, it's just like everybody's coming to the funeral because it's him, you know? And the auditorium there is named Harold Dune Auditorium. They named it that maybe a decade ago. It used to just be called the Murdo Auditorium. And it was just a way of honoring his legacy in that town. And just like, this guy's been here for a long time and cares about this place.
So Bob, as his grandson growing up, how did you experience his faith? Like, in what ways did you see his faith come out in his life, the way that the conversations you had, just his presence? What was that like as his grandson?
Well, number one, he just loves Christ. And that's just plain and simple, you know. And he had started this church that I said started in his living room. Then they bought a building and built this building right on Highway 16 in Murdo. So, and he just always was really committed to that church. It's a small church. It's probably 40 people, you know. It's not a huge congregation. But he just was always giving his life and giving his investment to those people, many of whom are farmers and ranchers. And, you know, just they have busy lives because they're trying to run an operation, running cattle or whatever. And he was just faithfully investing in them in discipleship. And he was just one of those guys who, like, really, his life story was, hey, if God said it and if it's true, then we don't need to know it. We don't need to ask any questions about it. Mm-hmm. You know, so he just was that guy who just, if it was in the Bible, he just was, he wanted you to know what that, you know. I remember I tell this story sometimes. I was in high school and he was visiting and I was playing football and I thought I was pretty great and came home telling stories about how great I did at football practice. And he goes, just like super matter of fact, without any facial expression and without any kind of rebuke. Like it did not come across like there was a rebuke or like he was bugged by what I was doing. He just quotes the proverb, let another man praise you and not your own lips. Literally just quoted that proverb. And it was just one of those moments where I was like, I think I just got my wings clipped, you know, like, but in a very like gentle and gracious way. So he was just that guy who just, what the Lord said just was sort of the only thing that mattered. And that defined how he viewed life and how he related to people. And man, he loved everyone, no matter who they were, no matter where they came from, but he wanted everyone to know Jesus. And so he was that guy who just wasn't going to pretend like we, you know, like Jesus isn't central in my life. She's like, nope, this is what I'm living for. This is what I'm about. That last category I said I wanted to talk about is just man of principle. And that kind of gets us to that, to that spot. He was just a man who very much I would say it this way. This is as I've been reflecting on it. I've got another little clip here of him talking about at the end of this recording back in 1984, his kids asked him, hey, what would you say to your descendants? Basically, like what wisdom, what advice do you have to give? And so we'll listen to that in a minute. But what I realized about my grandfather is that this is why the wisdom literature is in the Bible. There's a certain way of thinking that I think American Christianity is not very good at embracing. And that way of thinking is what you might call just a covenantal view of life, which is like, hey, actually, if you obey the Lord, it will go well with you. And if you live your life according to biblical wisdom, wisdom is its own reward. When you're a person of integrity, right? Even your enemies are at peace with you. There's just things that are true about how God has wired the world. And my grandfather was just the kind of person who his life actually tells that story. Just like he was committed to living in a way that was faithful to Scripture. And the results, the fruitfulness of that wisdom brought blessing to his life. He was well respected. He was well loved by his kids and grandkids. He had everything he needed in life. He was not a wealthy man, but the Lord took care of him till the end. And he just was faithful in everything. And so he just has that. He was a man who just was willing to live by principle, and that really defined his life. Travis, why don't you roll that clip from the end of his life and let's hear him talk about, or not the end of his life, but as he gives advice of like, hey, how should we think about life?
When we were talking earlier, and we were just talking about the question, you said, well, it's hard to summarize, but I guess I would say walk in truth, walk consistently, and then pay the price. Any comment on that last point? You didn't say anything about that.
I've never really felt that the price was high. When we came to Christ, we totally committed our lives to Him, whatever came. And I think having that as a basic premise of your life, then when problems come up, when decisions come up, it isn't an issue. You just walk trusting Him. And Jesus said, you know, that my burden is easy and my, what is it? My yoke is easy and my burden is light. And with him to help you bear that burden, the price has really been a joyous one as far as we've been concerned.
So you hear him say there, the basic premise of my life is committed to Jesus actually makes all the other decisions easier. It's just the basic premise is my life belongs to Christ. And so whatever comes, that's not changing. And when I say he was a man of principle, that's what I mean, is just his, there was never any wavering in his world about what's the right thing to do in a given situation. Is it worth it to keep walking with Christ when suffering, hardship, persecution, difficulty comes? Am I going to stay faithful to this path? The answer to that was always yes, because his he just made that decision. And again, that's one of those things that where it's the beautiful thing to me about that generation of people is that there was just a very deep sort of consistency that just felt like some of the questions we get all wrapped around the axle about, they just didn't even ask. He's just like, you know what? All right, whatever. I've given my life to the Lord, and that's what's defining me.
So it's pretty interesting to just think about this D1 athlete becomes this fighter pilot, lands back in South Dakota, and changes really the trajectory of your family. I mean, this is his legacy, but it's also has now been inherited by you and a bunch of other people in your family. And so there's a bunch of ministers in your family, people heralding the good news, if you will. Hmm. You like that?
Heralding the good news. That was good. That was really good.
And it's just interesting to think about it. I'm just sitting here listening to you, Bob, reflect on your grandfather and thinking, not every day do I think about how much influence I have by following Christ.
Yeah.
You know, I tend to think, okay, I got to follow Christ. I'm following Christ. I've hitched my wagon to Christ. Like, it's all about Christ. I think about that, but I don't always think about, you know, decades from now, what does that actually look like? And, you know, and I'll be forgotten and all of that. That's fine. Really, I've come to terms with that part of it. But it is interesting to think about the influence that you have by just simply living a simple life, faithful to Christ, and that legacy lives on into so many different ways.
Yeah, that's really true. And, I think that's my grandfather for me is just a model of, all right, I want to be faithful to something for a long time. Because, man, the longer you live faithfully to a way of life, just the more the Lord does with that. You know, the longer you live faithfully to Christ, the more he's going to do with that. And there is something about seeing that faithfulness over time that is very, very encouraging. So, thanks for letting me remember my grandfather, Harold Thune, and trust that his legacy would be encouraging to you as you think about what the Lord might be calling you to in your own legacy.
The goal of this podcast is to equip our own church for discipleship and mission. So if you're a Christian or church leader in another context, we thank you for listening in, and we pray that this conversation might be helpful to you as you minister in your own context. We always love to hear from you, the listeners, so send us an email, podcast@cdomaha.com, and we'll see you again next Wednesday for another Wednesday conversation. Thanks for coughing into the mic.
Sorry.
Fine.